Hello and welcome to another episode of True Stories of Good People, a podcast brought to you by GoFundMe. I'm your host, Kelsey Little. In each episode, we sit down with someone who's making a difference in other people's lives or has had their life changed by someone kind. Skendi Kernizan grew up in a small village outside of Haiti. He had the opportunity to go to school outside of their village, but many other kids didn't have that same chance. Eventually, Skendi moved to the U.S. for school and is now the director of MIT's Self-Assembly Lab, where he develops cutting-edge materials and architectural theory. However, he never stopped thinking about all of those kids back home who don't have access to the kind of education they deserve. So he decided to take action. Hello out there from Boston, Massachusetts. I'm sitting here at Ugly Duck Studios today with Skendi Kernizan. Skendi, I'm so excited to sit down and talk with you today. How's it going?
It's going. I'm excited. It's a little cold, but it's glad to be here.
It is. It's a little cold here coming from California, but I'm dealing with it. So, Skendi, you have a pretty cool job here in Boston. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. I co-direct a research lab at MIT. It's myself and two other co-directors, Skylar and Jared, and I've been involved with the lab for the past 3 years.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Is MIT also where you went to school?
No, MIT, I went to school at Philadelphia University. Myself and the other two co-directors went to school there together for undergrad.
Oh, wow.
For architecture.
What made you want to study architecture?
I would say my dad was a big influence. I grew up kind of being on site with him because he does engineering in Haiti.
Oh, awesome.
So we're always on site and I've always been involved with construction. So it kind of influenced me to pick architecture.
Other than your dad, do you have a favorite architect or someone who's in that field?
I try not to pick a favorite. I'm always keeping an eye out for kind of who's doing something different.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I approach design, is kind of thinking, okay, what hasn't been done yet and who's pushing the limits of what architecture can do. So
what's like your dream architecture project that you would work on someday?
I used to have a dream when I was in school. I used to think about, this is thinking back about going back to Haiti, like, can you design with trash? And it was kind of, can you come up with a cool system that could use found objects and trash to build something safe, sustainable within Haiti? So I haven't figured it out yet, but I'm still thinking about something like that.
Nice. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
So the lab that you work in, I was looking into it. So it's a self-assembly lab. Is that right? I've never heard of that before. What kinds of things are done inside the lab?
Sure. Skylar Tibbetts started the lab years ago, and he was kind of exploring the idea of self-assembly, the idea that things can assemble themselves, that you can have disorganized components create something that's organized.
Wow.
A way to think about it, going back to architecture, the idea that a building can build itself. Like, if you have the right components, the components come together and build themselves. So that was how the lab started. But since then, we've explored a lot of different avenues in terms of research. So we deal a lot with materials, how materials can transform based on their natural skills and elements that they have within them. So like, wood will react to moisture. Can you design with wood to transform after you've created the geometry and let it just become the shape that it needs to be? And then we've been exploring recently the world of 3D printing, and we've kind of come up with a new way of 3D printing faster and bigger objects. So, you know, it's kind of a, when I explain to people what I do, they always like, this sounds awesome.
Yeah.
But it is. It's kind of a fun playground in a way, in terms of the things that we come up with and we design and the great companies that we get to work with. So we're lucky.
That's so cool. It sounds like kind of cutting edge. Like, it's cool to be working in a field where things are always changing and coming up with new technology.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's, you know, our internal joke is, you know, this is the future. We're trying to push, this should be the future. And that's the way we approach things.
That's rad. I love that.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you were born and grew up in Haiti. Can you share with us about the place that you grew up?
Oh, of course. I grew up in an area called La Plaine, near the airport. And I grew up in a kind of a small gated community. It's kind of home, and it's always been home for me in terms of driving from the airport, entering that community, brings a lot of memory in terms of growing up with a lot of friends that I grew up with within that community, playing soccer. Mm-hmm. We had a soccer field there, so we played a lot of soccer, and I loved playing soccer there, and played basketball at a friend's backyard. And it wasn't like a proper court. It was just a net and a little space that we all play basketball then. So, and I grew up around dogs. You know, my parents always had dogs, and we had dogs around for security purposes, but always had at least 4 to 5 dogs. Aww, when I was a kid.
Love dogs.
Never remember not having a dog in the house. So it was great. Small house with a lot of trees. You know, if you needed a coconut, you could just climb the trees, get it, drink it, eat it. A lot of fruits. So that's the environment that I grew up in.
Awesome.
Yep.
So when did you actually move to the U.S.?
Officially, was for college.
Okay.
I was, you know, my parents came to the States, and I was born in the States, but then they moved back to Haiti within a year. And, you know, I used to come to the States for a vacation. So I would see my cousins who lived in New Jersey. And that's when I started learning English, just practicing English with them, but mainly grew up in Haiti and moved for college back in 2003.
Nice.
Yeah, to Philadelphia.
Did your family come with you when you moved?
No, it was just myself. My parents and my brother stayed in Haiti. So it was just me moving to a new city by myself.
It's kind of scary.
It is a little intimidating and scary. And, you know, I later learned afterwards how hard it was for my parents to kind of like drop me off and then go back to Haiti. But I've been lucky to have kind of family in Jersey, you know, not too far, and uncles and aunts who kind of helped out when I needed to. So
that's great.
Yeah.
What was the experience like for you moving from Haiti to Philadelphia?
It was exciting as a kid, you know, 17-year-old moving to go to college. And then, you know, growing up, my idea of college came from TV.
Yeah.
And the idea that it's a fun environment, that you go to school, you make friends. And that's the mentality I had in my mind. And almost kind of the first year, I was so focused knowing that my parents wanted me to be here. I'm here to perform. So it was kind of like focus on the school, forget about what was happening in Haiti. And that was kind of my job in a way, in terms of forget the bad stuff that's happening and focus on getting an education, because my parents worked so hard to get me here. So that was my focus, and I enjoyed it. I made a lot of friends, and was inspired by a lot of people too. So
did you think about home a lot during that time?
Of course. Even kind of calling, you know, having an opportunity to call, talk to my parents. It wasn't always kind of a daily or weekly thing, but it was kind of hard to focus in school. I think I struggled in the first few semesters because of that, but afterwards it became a routine, almost kind of hard. It sounds bad, but, you know, at times you kind of forget. You're like, okay, forget about home, forget about the parents, and try to be here in the moment. And that was hard to kind of create that separation.
Yeah.
But I think it's one of the things that you have to do, and you just need to do in order to kind of move forward.
Yeah. Well, so you did go back and visit, and you stayed kind of involved in the community there. And I think in 2015, you and your family did something pretty remarkable for your community. Can you share with us about that?
Yes. And, you know, the credit is really to my uncles and my parents, just my family in Jersey in general, because, you know, at the time, I'm still 2015, just graduated. I'm still figuring out what to do with my life, going back and forth. But they kind of, they always, especially my uncle, Pierre, always wanted to go back and give to the community. And we shared that common goal. So for them to kind of go, okay, let's start a school. Let's kind of provide a school to a community that needs it and that doesn't have it, was kind of a big step. And for them to kind of go head on and partner with a church there to help us get a land and build the school was very exciting. And my involvement at the time, you know, when it first started, was very minimal, to be honest. It was kind of like, I knew about the updates. I was helping kind of find people to help donate. But I wasn't as involved as I am now.
Donations are really important
too.
Yes,
it is.
It costs a lot to build a school and keep it running. What did they call the school?
So the school, you know, the organization is called La Salle's Own Hand. So l'Institut du Bon Berger.
Well, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
What language is that?
Yeah, it's French.
Oh.
It's French. And that's, you know, that's the language of Haiti. So that's the name of the school. And so that's kind of what we provided to the community. And it wasn't there, and we kind of came up and made it happen there.
Wow. So there wasn't a school there previously?
No. And, you know, the school, the closest school within that community of La Salle is at least 4 to 5 miles away. And
wow.
You can imagine that a lot of the family that live there and the people in that community don't have access to transportation. And, you know, the roads are not paved. So it's hard to even get a taxi or tap-tap is how we call it in Haiti. Wow. To get you from point A to point B. And that costs money too.
Yeah.
To travel 5 mile plus. So that's what we realized. And because there wasn't a school, people were not going to school. So we decided we wanted to help that community. And it's a community that's my dad, my uncle grew up in. So they were brought up in that community. And that was the way that it made sense to give back.
That's so incredible that you guys did that. Did your dad have the opportunity to use his construction and architectural knowledge to help actually create it?
Correct. And he's kind of been in that department, the leader in terms of having his own firm and team to help build it and raising money and using his own money to also provide to help with the construction. And knowing the field obviously made it easier to get something up and going pretty fast. So,
wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. What was the creation process like? I mean, where do you start with something like that? Do you secure a piece of land first, or and how long did it take overall?
Yeah. If you do research about land ownership in Haiti, it's one of those things that's very difficult to trace, to figure out who owns the land and whatnot. And I think having the church involved and having that they had a small part of that land already that they were using as kind of a medical area. So they had a little pharmacy there, and they had just an open land that's just hasn't been explored and used.
Wow.
And, you know, with the vision of my uncle, my family, and my dad, it was kind of like, this is a good opportunity to kind of expand, like use what's there, use the land, and build up on it. So, you know, the process takes a couple of years to get it done.
Wow.
But, you know, by 2016, 2015, we were kind of, by the end of that year, we had structures, you know, we had a structure up, but it wasn't finished, but we were kind of like building onto it as we started bringing people into that community.
Nice. Why would you say, I mean, other than obvious, providing education is a great cause, but why do you think this was so important to you and your family?
'Cause it's home. As simple as that. It's you want to help out people who have helped you become who you are today. So, and that's something that's been taught to me at a young age. You know, family is family, and that's the first kind of group that you'll have to ask for help and who will kind of also teach you how to be better. So that's the simple answer.
Nice.
'Cause it's home.
Yeah. Did you go to school when you lived in that town?
So, yeah, I went to school in La Plaine, which is near La Salle. I went to school outside of that community, but, you know, I grew up in Haiti. So I went to a few different schools growing up. We bounced around a few different schools. And then high school I did at an American school.
Oh, wow.
Did my high school. And that's what provided me an opportunity to apply to colleges in the United States.
So the school was built, which is amazing, but schools need support ongoing to stay afloat, and that's where your GoFundMe campaign comes in.
Yeah.
So what was the idea behind launching the campaign in the first place?
So since we started the school in New Jersey, we've been kind of throwing these galas to help parties, to help get donations through the door. And we have been doing it for years.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things that we realize is, you know, we're putting money in to create, to pay for a space, to get people invited.
So much overhead with those things.
Exactly. And though we are getting money in, it wasn't enough to kind of keep the school up and running. Because, you know, what we're providing to the school is, you know, we're providing teachers that we train. You know, we're paying for their training. We're providing meal to the kids. And uniform to the kids. So it cost a lot to keep the school running, obviously.
Yeah.
So myself and my cousin, we thought, you know, we need a better way to raise money and a faster way to raise money and a way to reach a larger community. And that's where GoFundMe came in. And I proposed and I said we should do a GoFundMe. And then by the time we had it up, we were getting donation, which was like nice. The most exciting thing in the world.
It just makes it so easy for people from anywhere to donate. And that's what I love about it so much. It removes those physical barriers that mm-hmm. used to exist with trying to raise, or when you have a gala, you know, only local people can kind of participate in that. But this opens it up worldwide.
Yes.
It's awesome. So how did things go when you kicked off the campaign? I mean, the first few weeks, what happened?
So I think the GoFundMe team was, I had no idea how it was going to go. But after setting it up, it was kind of a back and forth with the GoFundMe team to help me. You know, we set it up. We had a goal in mind. And then GoFundMe reached out and said, hey, we like this story and we'd like to help you out by doing a video to help reach other people, some of the people that they knew personally. And that's where, you know, through working with them, by the time the video came in and they were blasting it to people that they knew, donation really, really kicked in within nice. Like days. We were getting thousands, which was like amazing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
What was your original goal on it?
The original was 30,000. Mm-hmm. And then as we started getting more donation, GoFundMe said, you should try to kick it up. And we kicked it up to 40,000. And I forget the exact number that we raised by the end of it, but it was close to 32,000, which
That's
was
incredible.
Kind of amazing.
It's huge.
Yeah, amazing.
You did a really great job on the campaign, kind of laying out for potential donors the impact that their donation could make. Could you explain briefly how much it actually costs to like sponsor a student or classroom or the school? I mean, I think it's interesting to get a sense of how much these things actually cost.
Yeah. And you know, to support a student for a whole year, we're talking about like hundreds of dollars. Just like $100 can like go so long.
Yeah.
Just to keep a kid in school. And that's all it costs. And even like $50 can help out with a meal, you know, for months, right? So it's not a lot of money. I mean, it is a lot of money, but you know, given the community and people who can afford it, I think it's something that's not that expensive to kind of help out a kid who has nothing and who can benefit from an education. And in the education for us, it's not just the formal act of learning how to read and write, but the importance of understanding why it's important to wash your hand, you know, before having a meal or just keeping, those are not things that they're getting at home. And the way we see it is by teaching the kids can then teach their parents about it.
Yeah.
And that's important to help influence the whole community.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was it like for you seeing people from all over donate to this campaign for your hometown where you came from? You know, I think a lot of the donations came from the U.S. because mm-hmm. a lot of people here saw the video and everything, but I feel like that's a really profound thing. What did that mean to you?
It's inspiring. It's always good to see positive impact or at least be part of a positive impact. There's so much going on in the world, and to know that a complete stranger will just give you money because they understand that this is a good cause makes you believe in humanity and the idea that people care. And if you give them something to care about, they will support you. And that's exciting, and it's inspiring to me and motivates me to keep going.
Nice. So how about for you on a personal level, as you sit here reflecting on this campaign and the impact that you were able to make, what does it feel like knowing that you were able to make such a profound difference in the lives of all these kids?
I feel like it's an interesting question because people come up to me and go, this was awesome. This is so exciting that you've done this. And to me, I'm like, this is natural. Like, I feel like it's just the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, I feel like, okay, I keep thinking, no, we can do better and we can do so much more. And obviously the campaign is inspired me to believe that, hey, we can do more. We can definitely we need to follow through for these kids, right? This can't be a one-time thing.
Yeah.
So it's been kind of a, motivator for me. And I'm very proud of what my family's done. I'm proud that I've been a part of it and I've been able to push this forward. And I do feel responsible to keep going and to help the kids, to see them grow and be an inspiration for them in the future.
That's beautiful. So have you been back to Haiti recently?
I have not recently. You know, recently, my wife and I recently had a baby, so it's been kind of...
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's our next project at the moment, but it's in parallel with what we're doing in Haiti.
Yeah.
You know, we want her to go to Haiti as well, so yeah. Our goal is to take her within the next couple of years. But I think for me, what I want to do is make sure that we have something that's sustainable in terms of a system to help support the school before I go back to Haiti to kind of be like, hey, yes, we're still here and we're still helping out. And this is the plan for the next 5 to 10 years, because that's what I want to be able to do, to have a plan and not to think of it of a month to month.
Yeah. So have your parents not met your daughter yet?
Oh, yes, they have. My mom would do anything to come and meet her. They were there the week after she was born.
Yay.
And we're very excited. They're very excited. They're enjoying being grandparents.
That's so awesome.
Having a little baby is such a, it's such an interesting thing. It's one of the things, obviously, they tell you can't plan for it.
Yeah.
Like they bring so much joy and challenges. It's amazing.
Life-changing.
Yeah, it's life-changing.
In the best way.
Yeah.
I bet your parents are so proud of you too for everything. What do they say when people ask them about you? What do you think?
They'll tell them that they're proud of what I've done. They're not surprised, I guess. That I've been able to do it. Yeah. I think that's what they expect out of myself and my two brothers, that we were expected to do good things in the community. We're expected to represent the family in the positive way. So I think they should be proud of what they've done as parents. They've inspired myself, my brothers, to be the best that we can be and to help others as much as we can.
Love it. So, Skendi, what's next for you? What do you hope the next 5 years looks like?
In terms of the campaign, in terms of the school, I'm hoping that we are able to collaborate with other groups, celebrities. I'm thinking that, you know, I'm not thinking of it, this is our team. I'm trying to build a team that involves event planners, celebrities, other people who have been doing this for years, who have success doing it. Because the way I see it is there are a lot of communities and a lot of organizations that are in Haiti and are trying to help Haiti the best that they can. And I think if we can try to collaborate together and teach each other what we've learned from our experiences, that we can kind of build a super team that's involved in helping Haiti and dedicated to helping Haiti and spreading the word out, because Haiti's been through a lot over the years. And I would love to remain and be a force that helps steer it to a completely positive environment, so that when people think of Haiti, they think of something positive and a place that they want to go visit.
Nice. So I have one last question for you.
Okay.
When you think of a brighter future for the world, what does that look like to you?
That's a very loaded question here. Brighter future. I think of a future. I'm like trying to put myself in terms of what I would like my daughter to see and be a part of. Of a future where people are think of the best of others before when they first meet someone. A community who's interested in helping one another. I think there's so much going on in this world that it's hard to trust one another. And I'm hoping the future involves a lot more trust, a lot more innovation and technology, and people who are not just thinking, people who are, I guess, also myself in the field of design and research, who are not just thinking about the next coolest technology, but how that technology can also help some of the issues that we have in the world, that whether it comes to sustainability, poverty, how can we use that to help the world? So that's what I'm hoping for the future.
Thank you again to Skendi for chatting with me this afternoon, and congratulations again to him and his partner for welcoming their new baby. We at GoFundMe wish them all the happiness and more. If you'd like to check out Skendi's campaign and support his mission, you can visit gofundme.com/Haiti-school. Thank you so much for listening to True Stories of Good People, a podcast brought to you by GoFundMe. If you were inspired by today's story, please help us out by heading over to iTunes and leaving us a rating, a review, and subscribing to the show. And if anyone you know loves inspiring stories, please share our podcast with them. It means the world to us. Also, we love to hear from listeners, so if you have any feedback, suggestions, or questions, you can write to us at podcast@gofundme.com. And lastly, for more behind-the-scenes content, you can follow us on Instagram at True Stories of Good People and on Twitter at TSGPPod. Quick thank you to Ugly Duck Studios in Boston, Massachusetts, where this episode was recorded, and to our editing team at Cloud Studios in Seattle, Washington. We'll be back next time with more True Stories of Good People. Talk to you then!